Episode 6, Finding a Way. The pin man's in my head again, pushing the ball of life. It's a really good sign. The pin man first appeared in my head when I started to really control my energies all those years ago. He just suddenly appeared one day, and I immediately knew he was there as a visual to remind me to keep the ball of life rolling and to stay on track and in control. The ball he pushed was as big as himself, and it kept changing colours. I quickly realised that the colours indicated the way I was feeling and the mood I was in on that particular day. I also realised if the ball was moving quickly, then I was doing well in life, but not to worry if it slowed down, as long as it didn't stop. I need to keep control now. I'm thinking a touch clearer, and I'm making a plan on how to get out of this mess. It's hard planning to get out of something you've never experienced before, but I know I need to calm down and be at peace. I started meditating in bed at night. I'd not meditated before. I must admit, it's hard meditating when you're a lateral thinker, as your mind wants to wander off in a different direction. I just wanted to drift away with Julie in meditation. I followed the path to meet her on a few occasions. Once I got a clear contact with her, I could see her sat on a rock in a cave I was in. It was so real. It was amazing. But my true contact with Julie came through the signs that she sent me, not meditation. Without those signs, I don't know where I'd be. Julie helped me so much. I needed help, and she knew that. The meditation, though, had brought me to my next port of call, breathing exercises. I can't quite remember how I stumbled upon Wim Hof. I'm not sure if my son had mentioned it, as one of his friends was practicing it at the time. But I'd recalled something I'd watched years ago about this Dutch guy submerging himself in the frozen canal waters of Amsterdam. The breathing exercises helps control your breathing, replacing carbon dioxide with oxygen, helping you hold your breath for longer, helping with general fitness, but more than anything for me, freeing your mind. The longest I could hold my breath before I started the exercises was about 1 minute 20 seconds. After a while, I was holding my breath for 3 minutes on quite a regular basis, and once for 4 minutes 8 seconds. It brought me mentally into a new place. A place different to my normal thinking, a deeper place, a place where it showed me that I could really push the boundaries and achieve things. Things I didn't think were possible. A place where my want of leaving this earth wasn't quite as strong, and a viewpoint from where I started to see the light. I'd been in contact with Julie's cousin Mark. We decided to get away for a few nights. Just before Mark was due to arrive, I went to pack a few things. Since Julie had been taken ill, which was now around 14 weeks ago, I'd taken over the washing and ironing duties. I opened my wardrobe to start packing, and immediately, as clear as day, there was an item of clothing that was totally out of place. I thought, what the hell is that doing there? It was a thick grey hoodie on its original hanger. Now, I'd been in that wardrobe every day for the last 14 weeks, either hanging clothes up after ironing them or taking them out to wear. It was on the side of the wardrobe I used most, where my everyday clothes were. That hoodie wasn't there. I didn't even know whose that hoodie was, but I knew that I hadn't put it there and neither had my son. It was right in the middle of my t-shirts, so obvious that it was impossible to miss. I took it from the wardrobe for closer inspection, and then realised that it was a hoodie that Julie had got me for either Christmas or birthday, and I hadn't worn it. I don't know where it'd been, but it wasn't in the wardrobe where I found it. I'm 1000% sure of that. I stood for a while pondering, and then looked up and said, "Oh, so you're dressing me now, are you?" I put the hoodie on, and to be truthful, I barely took it off my back for months and still wear it on a regular basis today. This was the second time Julie had sent me a very definite sign when Mark was about. On our break away, Julie sent me yet another clear and crazy sign while Mark was sat opposite me. It was quiet there and good to get away. We both enjoyed ourselves, and I'm glad we went, as I feel it was part of both our recoveries. a new environment and time to reminisce and enjoy the memories that we both had. It's a 3-hour journey back, and as soon as I got home, I started to feel unwell. I later found out that I'd caught COVID. That was puzzling, seeing I'd barely seen anyone all week, and Mark didn't have it, even though we'd been in close proximity to each other for days, and I'd also spent 3 hours next to each other in the car, there and back. I remember thinking, I hope this is bad, and if it is, I'm not going to fight it. It wasn't bad. It was reasonably mild, just like a very heavy cold for a few days. I started to feel better on day 4, but lost my taste for about 3 weeks. While I was away, I told Mark that I was thinking of going on holiday on my own. I'd mentioned Budapest as a possible location, as it was a place I'd always fancied in the past. Mark told me he usually goes away for his anniversary, not that I knew when that was, and that he would be going to Belfast or Cardiff this year. After mentioning my proposed trip to Budapest to a handful of people, including my daughter and my therapist, I'd been advised not to go. My daughter in particular had concerns for my well-being and didn't want me to be abroad if anything should happen. I've been advised to stay in the UK, where I can just jump in the car and drive home if I start feeling down. The last thing I want to do now is worry my daughter. The death of her mother is still very fresh, and though she's coping very well along with the amazing support from her fiancé, this is the biggest test of character in her 26 years on this earth. Scotland is somewhere I've worked in quite a lot. We've also had family holidays to Loch Rannoch, which were very special times, and also my first holiday with Julie was in Dalbeattie near Dumfries. I thought maybe a trip back to Dalbeattie would be memorable. Maybe find where we stayed and reminisce about the time we had together. Over the following week or so, I started looking into accommodation, hiking and driving routes around the region of Dumfries and Galloway. Something kept directing me into dead ends and pushing me away from the area. I extended my search to the nearby island of Arran and along the southwest coastline of Scotland, but nothing was grabbing me there either. That's not to say these areas aren't fantastic places to visit. It's just my mind was clouded and I moved away from that idea. I thought about going to Loch Ness. I'd not been as far north as there before, though I'd considered it on numerous occasions in the past. Rannoch was just south of Loch Ness, and was a place we still talk about with fond memories. I started to look at campsite with yurts and cabins, nothing too fancy, just somewhere dry where I could cook, sleep, and a base to go hiking and rid my mind from any distractions. Scotland is very spiritual. It's a place where you can just drift away with nature. I've always holidayed in Scotland out of season when traffic and tourists are scarce. I feel you see the real Scotland then. I kept looking on the internet at a campsite that seemed ideal. It was halfway up the east side of the loch, in the right location, at the right price, but for some reason, which is unusual for me, I didn't jump on it and book it. Something was stopping me. A place on the west side of the loch kept jumping up and down in the corner of my eye, and I kept ignoring it. The accommodation is a 2-bedroom apartment in a place called Drumna Drocket. It's more expensive than the yurt I was looking at, but still reasonable seeing it'll be out of season. It's a 7-hour drive to both locations, but that doesn't bother me, as it'll give me plenty of time to think. In early November, I went away for a few days with my daughter and her fiancé. On one of the nights away, we went out and I ended up having an emotional meltdown after drinking. All my emotions that I had just about controlled came crashing down like an avalanche. The following morning I was laying in bed thinking, I can't do this to my kids anymore. I've always been a strong father for them and now they're looking after me. They were suffering their own grief after the mother's death. They had this long rocky road ahead of them and now they were looking after me. I'm just adding to their misery. I decided there and then that the only way I was going to dig myself out of this hole was to give up drinking, for good. It was doing me no favours, and though I enjoyed drinking socially, moving forward in life was far more important than anything else. Even having a couple of drinks was enough to bring negativity the following morning. I realised that each time I drank, I took a step backwards in my recovery. I was just treading water, getting nowhere fast, losing the momentum I had gained and dropping back to square one. Drinking any amount of alcohol was the worst thing I could do if I wanted to recover from this heartbreak. I knew that once I gave it up, I'd never go back to it, no matter how much I liked it. These meltdowns were going to drag us all down, and I don't think Julie would be very proud of me if I did that. I thought to myself, this is the first day of the rest of your life. Now get a grip and be the father you've always been. Someone your children can look up to again. Cut out the meltdowns. You've cried a bucket of tears, now no more. There comes a time during bereavement, no matter how sad you feel, when you have to stop crying and be strong. I remember being at the home of friends of mine talking about Julie when I'm holding back the tears, and they said to me, just let it all out, Phil. And I replied, no, this has to stop one day. I can't just keep doing this for the rest of my life. If you let your emotions run wild, suddenly you're turning sorrow into pity, and pity in my book is a very ugly thing. A week after my trip away with my daughter, I'm off to Scotland on my own. I need to get used to being on my own, go out for a meal on my own, to live totally independently. It's weird because I only have to fend for myself now. I've been so used to looking after other people, and now I don't have to consider anyone else. Luckily, I have enough funds to tide me over, and I don't intend on working again until I feel I'm back on the right track. As usual, I've gone with my instincts and I'm off to Drumnadrochit. That jumping up and down in the corner of my eye says something plain and simple to me. Follow your instinct. Go there. It's the right choice. I arrive at the apartment at approximately 4 p.m. and open the door. There's a narrow hallway that leads to the bedrooms and a small bathroom. The stairs just to the left as you enter the property lead to a first floor open plan kitchen, diner and lounge areas. I empty my bag, hang up my clothes and head upstairs. There's large windows that surround three sides of the first floor and offer a view over the hillside and stream at the rear of the property. I remove the picture hung up above the television and replace it with a large canvas print that I'd brought with me. I had the print made just after Julie died. It's a close-up photo taken at night of the two of us with London Bridge in the background. That trip to London was one of Julie's birthday presents from me. We stayed in the London Bridge Hotel in a room overlooking the bridge, and then we went to a theatre in Covent Garden to watch War Horse. I sat down on the large leather couch and got a feeling that I'd never had while travelling before. I feel totally at home. So much so that I could see myself staying here forever. I'm still not sure how I ended up in Drumnadrochit when I should have been in Budapest, but I know spiritually there's a reason why I'm here. That night I stay in, heat up some homemade food that I'd brought, watch a bit of television and go to bed. The following morning I awake in my new temporary home. I get up, have a shower and head upstairs to make some breakfast. Whilst I'm sat eating my breakfast, I look at the picture above the television and remind myself why I'm here. In a way, it feels a touch strange, but generally, it doesn't, and I'm looking forward to getting out and about hiking. I know the best place to really free your mind is out walking in a place with no distractions. I used to walk my dog in remote places or very late at night, and that's when my mind was at peace and I could find solutions to everyday problems. I say goodbye to Julie, kiss my hand and touch her picture. I travel south along the winding road that hugs the Lochs coastline, heading in the direction of Fort Augustus. Just north of Fort Augustus, about 25 minutes drive from Drumnadrochit, is a place called Alt na Cruach, a steep, beautiful woodland walk. I started a long, continuous climb to the top, stopping a number of times to catch my breath. I'm nowhere near fit enough to climb this non-stop. I eventually reach the summit and look at my first elevated view of Loch Ness. It's a cloudy day and a strong wind is whipping around the moorland at the top, but I feel amazing. Though it's cold up there, I'm now down to a t-shirt. I keep walking, gaining a better and better view of the loch the more I walk along the route. Eventually, I come across a 4 foot high, open top circular stone structure with a seat in it. I sit down, open my rucksack and retrieve the lunch I'd made earlier. As I'm sat there, the realization of what total freedom feels like hits me with joy and sadness. I feel for the first time as one with nature, but also totally alone. After lunch, I continue along the path that's part of the Great Glen Way, until I get to a point where I think it's wise to head back. Back at the apartment, I have dinner and feel happy that not only have I got today over and done with, but I've really enjoyed it and feel infused by the experience. I've had a feeling from the family that they were unsure why I was running off to Scotland. Maybe it's just me overthinking the situation, so I send all my photographs I've taken to my two mother-in-laws, my daughter and a couple of female friends. Hopefully that will ease any fears. I then do something that I never do. I look in the visitor's book that's lay on the dining room table. I read some of the comments from the guests. I only quickly glance over the first few pages and see a pattern to the way that the visitors have viewed the apartment. They also feel at home there. I then read a comment from a guest describing Loch Afric, Plodder Falls and Glen Afric as hidden gems. I look up Loch Afric and decide to visit it the following day. It's a 50-minute drive to the car park at Loch Afric, heading inland away from Loch Ness. It's a beautiful drive, hardly passing any traffic or pedestrians. After about 30 minutes or so, I leave the main road and drive along the narrow track that hugs the river, climbing and descending, looking in amazement at the pine forest and pure natural beauty of the area. Each turn brings a different view to go up at. I eventually reach the car park. There's just one car parked up, but I don't see anybody about. I like it that way. I want to be on my own. I need to be on my own to be able to drift away with nature. I know I've come to find myself, find the path that'll lead me to my new life. I know something will click soon and things will make sense. When it will happen, I don't know. But what I am sure about is, I've done the right thing coming to Scotland. I'm starting to feel alive, feeling different than I felt for a while. My muscles are stiff after yesterday's walk and the circuit around Loch Afric is over 12 miles with an estimated duration between 4.5 and 6.5 hours. But never do I once think that this is too much for me, even though I'm not an experienced hiker and only reasonably fit. The first half of the circuit, even though reasonably flat, is tough going at this time of year and is over quite rugged and boggy land, with a couple of stream crossings which turn out to be quite torrid after the heavy rainfall we've had earlier in the week. The views as I walk are nature at its best. The long views of the lochs and the surrounding mountains change constantly. I feel alone, yet safe and totally at peace. The weather suddenly changes after an hour or so, with prolonged strong whistling winds and driving rain hitting me head on. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. If anything, it just makes me acknowledge even more the reason why I'm here. Hiking is like life. You can have some really tough times when you have to dig deep, but the rewards are there if you don't give up. Experiences gained from those tough times that make you mentally stronger, wiser, more capable and confident of conquering any situation that's thrown at you. Eventually I spot the bridge and the remote cottage at the end of the loch and know I'm halfway there. I cross the bridge, past the cottage and find a large rock to sit on and have my lunch that I brought with me. I gaze at the scenery. It feels surreal. I'm all alone in the middle of nowhere, sat on a rock eating a sandwich, yet it feels so right. I've been talking to Julie as I've walked. I know she's with me, and this is her chance to see the landscape, as she wasn't fit enough to take on trips like this when she was alive. She loved her holidays and loved Scotland. The second half of the circuit is on hard, smooth track with long, steady slopes which are quite tiring after 8 or so miles. About 2 miles from the car, I pass a couple with a dog. They're the only people I've seen on this walk, which is similar to yesterday's walk, where I only passed a couple of hikers. I eventually see the bridge that will bring me back to the car park. I sit in the car after completing a circuit in just under 4 hours. I'm 6'2" and have a long and fast stride, and you tend to walk a lot faster when you're on your own. I'm not bothered about the time, but I'm elated that I've completed a circuit. This is another big tick in my head. Something else I've achieved on my own. A step forward. I travel back to the apartment and stop off at the local store. I step out of the car and all my muscles seize up and I'm as good as rooted to the spot. I remember walking into the store like a robot. God knows what I look like. I drove back to the apartment, WhatsApp my photos to my mother-in-law's daughter and friends, and settle in for the night. Though I didn't know at that time, tomorrow will be the turning point and a day I'll never, ever forget as long as I live.